Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on 101 business principles when we come back. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership and private property and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? That bonds are the exact opposite to private property? That public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights? And permits are the exact opposite to private business? And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by government agencies and agents? From agencies like OSHA, or the EPA, or the State Tax Commission, or Zoning and Planning, or the IRS, or the swarms of government agents and agencies who are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot that we can do, and the first step is to inform ourselves as to the legal alternatives that we have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. And let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and then send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, talking about business principles. There are certain things that people do in life and they get a result from it. Solomon made an observation. He said, you wring your nose, you get blood. Well, everything in life works like that. If you drive too fast around a 35-mile-an-hour turn, you roll off the road and wreck your car. If you step off of a high building, you'll fall down. You won't fall to the right, you won't fall to the left, you won't fall up, you will fall down. So there's a result. Some things are pretty obvious. Some things aren't so obvious. Sometimes we hear stories like, you know, in business, for instance, you know, opportunity only knocks once. I can remember as a youngster, people would tell me, especially my elders, you know, they'd say, opportunity only knocks once. And I guess the theory behind that was, well, when this opportunity knocks, you got to strike. And strike now, because it's only going to happen to you once in a lifetime. See? And my concern was always, well, how do I know when this opportunity strikes? What is this opportunity anyway? And when this opportunity comes, it's only going to come once. And so how am I going to recognize it? And then as I got a little older and I mused on the problem and the thought of it, I discovered that, well, that's a fool's parable. Because opportunity knocks many, many times. Opportunity is like rain. Opportunity is out there. Opportunity is something that you can actually create yourself. you can make opportunity. It isn't something that you catch, you know, like a cold or the flu. Opportunity is something that you take advantage of or you create for your own benefit. So I came to this conclusion that the old adage that says opportunity only knocks once is a false proverb. It's a proverb of fools. And that's because opportunity is like rain. It's everywhere. And it's like running water. It needs to be channeled and controlled for best results. So sometimes you hear stories or you'll hear some proverb or some statement that's made by somebody that's actually totally false. So, you know, I said last time that good business is like a good story. It comes from the heart. It doesn't come from company policy. And oftentimes we have company policy that gets in the way of good business. Now, number 65 is where we want to start today. If you can't sell it, nobody needs it. In other words, if you've got something that won't sell, it's because there's nobody that needs it. Nobody wants it. So don't make something that you can't sell. This is the other side of Henry Kaiser's proverb, or Henry Kaiser's business strategy, or his idea when he said, find a need and fill it. Many times, especially around my local area, I'll see somebody open a new business over here, and it's called Jean's Whatnots, or Jessica's Flowers and Notions, and these little dummy businesses over here. Now, I don't know, there might be people that buy trash, you know, and they like it because they got too much money. They don't know what else to do with it, but you know, I drive down the street, right? Or there's a ceramic lady over here, and she's got this little ceramic place. Now, ceramics may sell, and notions and whatnots may sell, but they don't sell well around here. And these little stores, they go in, and then they go out. They go in, and then they go out. They're here for a while, and then they disappear. And that's because these people are creating little businesses over here in areas of life that they know something about or that they're real interested in, and they're real excited about it. And so they say, well, I'm going to go share this with everybody else. Problem is, nobody else around here wants to buy notions and whatnots or artificial flowers and all the rest of the trash that goes along with it. Now, there are people who need to buy sugar and salt and wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil, and we call those grocery stores. And even the grocery stores, you know, are subject to change. And then in life, things change. Things change. And the business atmosphere changes. What was selling in this local area at one time, as I mentioned earlier, like buggy whips. You know, at the turn of the century, buggy whips was probably a pretty good business to get into. I imagine everybody needed one. Now, there's still a market for buggy whips, but it's pretty limited now to the Amish and a few other people that have horses. And there's lots of people that have horses, and they have a lot of needs, but it's not something, you know, that I want to put in George's Buggy Whip store, you know, here in Isabella, Missouri. That's not what the people around me need. It's not something that they're just clamoring for. Now, there are things that sell, like hula hoops. There are these pet rocks, and there's all kinds of crazy nonsense out here that sells. And it sells for a time. It's a fad. It's here today, and it's gone tomorrow. And sometimes people get in on these little fad things, and then they make a killing off of it. You know, they'll get into something, and then they get out of it. They'll get into something else, and they'll get out of it. So I wouldn't tell you that you shouldn't get into these little fads or jeans whatnots, but as a general rule, it runs against, you know, just basic common sense. If you can't sell it, nobody needs it. So don't make something that you can't sell. You want to make sure that whatever it is that you're doing over here has got a market for it. Number 66, don't sell something you don't have. I told you the Dennis Lee story here. You know, Dennis Lee was a con man, in terms simple. And he was selling free energy machines. You bought this machine for $17,000 and you plugged it in and it gave you all kinds of free electricity. Well, boy, I want two of those. I told the guy, I said, I'm going to take at least two and maybe more. And he said, okay, we'll get your checkbook out. And I said, well, where's the machine? I'd like to plug it in and watch it work. And he said, well, we haven't made one yet. No, we haven't got the factory built. We're taking orders. You give us your $17,000 and we're going to build a factory and we're going to turn out this machine. So what they were doing is selling something that they didn't have. Now, that's bad business. John Grambush wanted to sell carburetors that he didn't have. I wanted to buy a carburetor that got 235 miles to the gallon. I think that's something that'll sell. You come up with a carburetor that gets 235 miles to the gallon, I think you can sell those all day long and without any problems at all. Now, John didn't have that carburetor, and I said, well, here, I got the money. I'll buy one right now and put it on my truck, and if it works, I'm gonna put in some more orders here for it. And the general concept is that if you can't turn out, you know, enough to supply General Motors, that you need to go to the bank and borrow money and all this good stuff. I already pointed out to you that a business that borrows money is most likely to fail. What you do is you take your own capital, your own money, and you make one of these thingies, and you go out and demonstrate it, and then you sell it. So if it costs you $250 to make one, that's $250 in cost of goods sold. You sell it for $500, you make $250 profit. Now, you take that $250 profit plus the $250 that you recovered in your cost of goods sold, and you go out and you make two of them. And then you sell those two, and you'll have $1,000. Now, the cost of goods sold is $500, so you take your cost of goods sold, and then you add that profit to it, and you can now make four. And then you go to 8, and then 16, and then 32, and then 64, and you just keep doubling that. And then you figure out what your time frame is, and you know it won't be very long until you'll buy and own your factory, and you'll own all of your inventory, and you'll be selling something that everybody needs and wants and desires, and you will be building a gigantic enterprise, and you'll make a lot of money off of it. And that's the way to start your business, and you finance it all by yourself. Just start off in your garage, and then just keep working up until you get to where you're happy and satisfied. And then start raking in the profits off of the size and scope of your business, keeping in mind that growth costs money. And if you want to spend your money on growth, you may end up with the biggest factory in the world, and then that'll be about the time you run out of customers because everybody's got one. All right, so if you can't sell it, nobody needs it, so don't make something you can't sell, and don't sell something you don't have. If you've got it, sell it, and if you don't have it, wait until you get it. Now, number 67 is don't look a gift horse in the mouth. And this is an old proverb I can remember. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth from the time I was a little kid. But what's it mean? What's that all about? In the old days, when you went to buy a horse, you can tell a lot about a horse by looking at his teeth. So you'd open the horse's mouth and you'd look at his teeth. And you could tell about how old he was and about what condition he was, about what kind of health he was in and so on, by looking at his teeth. Well, you know, this proverb developed because if somebody gave you a horse and you looked in his mouth, you're looking a gift horse in the mouth, and that's going to cause hard feelings. You know, I'm giving you this thing over here, so why are you questioning me? It didn't cost anything to start with. Why are you looking at this horse like I'm a thief? See? So, one day, I had some tithe I needed to pay out, and there's an old man and an old lady lives close by, and so I took a bar of silver, one of those 100-ounce bars, and I went down to the post office, and I just sent it anonymously to these people. Now, these people then are going to receive this 100-ounce bar of silver in the mail from some anonymous donor, which fits with the scripture that says, don't let anybody know, or don't let your right hand know what your left hand doeth, you know. And don't make a big scene out of giving somebody charity, you know, because if you do that, you have your reward. And if you do it in secret, then the scripture tells us that God will reward you openly. Well, anyway, the moral of the story is that when you're giving money to charity, you don't want anybody to know about it, and so I just sent it anonymously. Now, that was a mistake on my part because I'm living in a small town. And when this bar of silver reached these people, it wasn't these people that complained about it, but their daughter Now, these people are old people, you know. They're in their 80s. And the daughter, you know, when she saw this come in the mail, she got real suspicious real fast. Now, who's doing this? And so she went down to the post office, and she just raised hell with our post mistress down here. It's a lady who runs the post office. And the post mistress admitted that, well, yes, it was George Gordon came in here, and he sent that to your parents. Well, she got on the telephone, and she just raised hell with me. And then she threatened to call the sheriff and the police and everybody else, and there's some kind of ulterior motive, and that I was out here doing something nasty and bad, wrong, wicked, terrible, awful, and evil, and one thing and another. And well, it finally blew over. I guess she didn't call the sheriff or the police, and they didn't put me in jail, and I survived that. But do you know, I've never sent another bar of silver to those people from that day to this. Those aren't the only people in the world that are in need, and I can find somebody else that's in need to send something, send somebody or send something to. And so it kind of scared me away, and I'm sorry that happened, because I think those people are just as deserving as anybody else. But there is my firsthand experience of looking a gift horse in the mouth. All it does is cause hard feelings, and it scares away the donor. Number 68, a profitable employee will never be unemployed. A profitable employee will never be unemployed. Boy, if that isn't the truth. You know, I'm an old-timey employer. I've employed hundreds of people in my lifetime. I wouldn't say thousands, but, you know, hundreds over the years. And I've had good employees, and I've had bad employees. Some employees steal from you. Some employees are lazy. Some employees are incompetent. Some are stupid. Some of them make mistakes because they don't think, and they cost you money and things like that. So, you know, I can tell you a good one from a bad one. You know, I can't just look at the guy and tell you if he's good or bad. But after I've watched him for a while, I can tell you. Now, I have observed personally that when you've got somebody that's good, you want to hang on to him. And when you've got a guy that's good and he wants to leave your employee, he wants to go somewhere else, if you like the guy, you'll give him a good recommendation. So, I got to tell you a little story here. I was working for Frank Rocha, and I was a brand new green as a gourd hand, and I got to thinking about a job that I had to do, and so I worked on this job, and pretty soon I got this job down to one half what it normally takes to do it. Learned from my Uncle Lyle. You want to be the best employee that this guy's got. And so I'm out here cleaning the barn, and normally it took 2 hours. I got it down to where I could do it in an hour. Well, when I got it down to doing it in an hour, then it made all of the rest of the employees look kind of slack. You see, there was two other guys there working on the place, and took them 2 hours. And when I first started, it took me 2 hours. Pretty soon, I got it down to an hour. And so the boss, he noticed that. Well, at the end of the year, the other two guys he let go, because he only kept one guy during the wintertime. And guess who it was he kept out of the three? Which one of the three do you think he kept? Well, he kept me. And so the diligence and hard work that I mentioned to you earlier in this series paid off. And then another factor comes in here, and that is, I'm a profitable employee. I make the boss money. You know, I've never been unemployed in my life. I'm an old man. I've had lots of jobs, worked for a lot of different people, never been unemployed once. And I wouldn't expect to be unemployed, but then I'm not drinking water at the water cooler and pinching the secretaries on the butt, spending my time doing frivolous nonsense. When I get through with one task, if I can't figure out what to do, I go to the boss and say, I'm done with that, what's next? Or if the boss isn't around, I can look around. I can see things that need to be done. You know, when a guy is unemployed, what he is saying to everybody is, all of the work is finished. There is nothing more to do. That's why we drink water and pinch the girls. It's because there's no more work. That's preposterous. There isn't any business anywhere that doesn't have more work to do. If nothing else, we'll get on the telephone and start drumming up sales. We'll start drumming up leads. We'll, you know, there's work to be done. We'll sweep the floor. We'll wash the windows. We'll dust the product. And when the boss sees that you're out here washing the windows and you're doing it without being told, then that says that you're a profitable employee. Now, he who makes the rules, you know, there's this old adage that says, he who has the gold makes the rules. Well, who makes the rules? The guy that's got the gold. The boss makes the rules because he's the guy that's got the money. I worked on a job one time, and a logging truck came in on the landing, and it was during lunchtime. And the guy that was the head loader there, his name was Martin Lasser. And Lasser was also the foreman on the job. So. And so, anyway, all the rest of us are sitting here eating, you know, and so this logging truck pulls in on the landing up here, and so Lasser, he jumps up, runs over to the loading machine, starts it up, and he takes this logging dolly off the truck, and they hooked it up, and he loaded up that truck in about 15 minutes. And now we hadn't quite finished. Well, we'd finished eating, but lunchtime wasn't over yet. Now Lasser hadn't eaten his lunch. You know, he took two bites off his sandwich. This truck pulls onto the landing. He jumps up. He runs over. He loads that truck. And he comes back over, and it's, you know, still a few minutes until we start back again. And so Lasser sits down. And somebody made a remark, you know, like, you know, you missed your lunch, dummy. You know, you could have let that guy, you know, just wait. He, you know, he came here at lunchtime. It's time for him to sit there and wait and cool his heels, you know, a little bit. And so Lasser, he looked over and he said, now you know why I'm the boss. I never forgot that. You know, he just looked at all of us and he said, now you know why I'm the boss. It's because when a job needs to be done, he doesn't stand around, he goes out and does it. By getting that truck loaded and off that landing, made that truck driver happy, he's going to come back and haul more logs off of this side. In fact, if we can get him out of here right away, he might make it to the mill and be back by 3:30, 4 o'clock and get another load out of here today, which is going to make the company more money. It's true, Lasser was not a good union man. Now, whenever we lose money, number 70, it's always on a deal that we wish we hadn't made. Whenever we lose money, it's always on a deal that we wish we hadn't made. And that's always been my excuse. Whenever I lost money, I could have done without that deal, but I thought that it was going to be a good deal. But I guess I didn't think far enough ahead. Now, that's what the bottom line is. I never lost any money on any deal I didn't make. You don't have to make every deal that comes by. But whenever we lose money, whenever the job goes bad, whenever there's something goes haywire, it's always on a deal that we then wish we hadn't made. So keep in mind that we don't have to make every deal. Pause and think about it a little bit. Go get some wise counsel. Talk to somebody else. Hey, what do you think of this? You know, when a deal comes by, my wife always calls me in and says, hey, what do you think of this? And sometimes I'll say, well, make sure you do this and such. And she'll say, oh, yeah, that's a good thing. Good thoughts. You know, yeah, make sure that you get a down payment. Hey, make sure that before you send that out that you got the money in your hand. Make, you know, and then maybe she forgot. Maybe she wasn't thinking about that. Things like that happen. Number 71, to ensure that your capital is invested wisely, invest your capital with yourself. Well, that's a wild new concept. See, most people want to invest their capital with Smith Barney. They want to invest their money with Dennis Lee and his energy machine. I don't know how many people gave Dennis Lee that $17,000, but not a single one of them ever got their energy machine, and they never got their $17,000 back either. That's why Dennis Lee was put in prison two or three times for selling these things. He was selling something he didn't have. That's what happened to Tucker. He was out here selling automobiles that he didn't have. And they call that fraud, you know. You end up in jail doing things like that. So rather than take those kinds of risks, you know, and that's a gamble, Tucker was gambling that he could get enough capital ahead that he could build the factory and he could turn out the automobiles to satisfy the orders. Sometimes people are just con men taking people's money. They don't ever intend to build a factory. They don't ever intend to fulfill the orders. That's why it's a bad business principle or a bad business practice to go out here and start selling things that you don't have. You want to make sure you got the inventory before you start selling it. If you don't, Slava will come back and bite you in the butt. So, to ensure that your capital is invested wisely, you invest it with yourself. Take your own money and find a need and fill it by finding something that's in a small package that's very valuable that everybody wants, and then go out and sell that. And buy it for a dollar and sell it for two and make your profit on the 2% principle. I mean, you can't, that's a winning combination. You can't lose doing that. You're not going to go to jail doing that. It's when we violate some of these principles, we violate some of these rules, that then we end up losing money, and it's always on a deal that we wish then we hadn't made. Now, number 72, to ensure the loss of your capital, invest it with anyone. You know, if you want to lose your money, the first guy that comes along with some kind of a wild March hare up his you-know-what, go ahead and give him your money and let him go out and invest it for you and see how that comes out. I mentioned to you earlier, I said, you know, I've invested my money with a lot of frauds and charlatans that I lost my money on and then wished that I hadn't done that. I've lost lots. Now, I don't want you to think, you know, that I'm so damn smart, you know, that I just can't lose money. I've lost so much money so often, in so many different ways, I can't help but be successful now. All I got to do is avoid all those mistakes I made in the past. I've reinvented the wheel 15 times. I already know how to do that. So the point here is, can you learn from my mistakes? I've made these mistakes before. I invested my money with just anybody, and yeah, he went out and lost my money, all right. Or he pocketed it and run off with it or did something else. 73. Opportunity is like rain. It's everywhere. And like running water, it needs to be channeled for best results. I mentioned that a little earlier. And 74. Opportunity only knocks once. That's a fool's proverb. Opportunity is like rain. It's everywhere. And you can go out and create your own opportunity. Opportunity is like rain. It's everywhere. It'll be here today, it'll be here tomorrow, it'll be there next week. We're on our way into a massive recession, maybe even depression. I will be making money in the depression. I know how to make money in boom times, I know how to make money in bust times. Don't ever think that there aren't needs out there. You know, when there's a depression, when there's a recession, when people are unemployed, everybody has needs. Unemployed people have needs. You don't have to be selling Jordache. You don't have to be selling designer shoes and designer clothes. You can be selling bib overalls and Red Wing work shoes. People have to eat. It doesn't make any difference whether you're employed or not, and you still have to eat. It doesn't make any difference whether there's a depression or whether there's boom times. Everybody has to have a roof over their head, and they have to have clothes. Find a need and fill it. Now, the need in depressed times is something different than the needs of people in boom times. In boom times, people want to buy new cars. In bust times, they want to fix their old car. So repairs are very popular. And in bad times, alcohol is very, very popular. People need to drink so that they can forget their troubles. I was over at the DX yesterday, and this lady came in this beat-up pizza, you know. and to buy some gas. And so I was there filling up a bunch of cans, you know, in the back of my pickup to bring back home here for my lawnmowers and chainsaws and things like that. And so I'm filling up a bunch of cans back here, 5-gallon cans. And so I'd already used this pump, see, and I had $191 rung up on that pump. And so the lady inside, she wasn't about to clear that pump until I came in and paid the $191. Now, there's another pump there this lady could have used, but she went in the store, and she was in there dinking around, so she came back out. She put in $5 worth of gas in her car. And I looked at her car, and I looked at her, and I said, well, that makes sense. That's probably about all the money she's got. It's $5, and so she's walking back in. And well, about this time, I finished up, and so I went into the store. Now, she's ahead of me, see? As it turns out, she's up ahead of me, and so I'm standing here in line. And so she orders three cartons of cigarettes, and she's got an envelope, and so she pays the $5 for the gas, and then she puts out $68 for three cartons of cigarettes. Then I paid my bill, and I'm standing there waiting to talk to Boyd, and this woman goes over and she buys a 12-pack of Budweiser beer. Now, this woman's got money for cigarettes and beer. She's only got $5 to put into her car. And I got to thinking about this. Geez, where's this lady getting her money? She's getting it out of the envelope. This lady's living on welfare in all probability. She's living off of the tax dollars for people like you and me. And what does she spend her money on? Just exactly the important things of life, the things that she really needs. Cigarettes and beer. $5 for the gas tank. If she'd have put that money in the gas tank so that she could go out here and look for a job, so she'd go out here and do something intelligent, you know, she might be able to make it in life. Young woman, you know, I'd say young woman in her 30s. All right, I got to give you a reminder here, boys and girls, that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio logs, a schedule, and archives, and that can be accessed to the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. We're talking about 101 business principles. Now, I mentioned this to you before, but in case you tuned in late, I teach business law. I teach private business. First of all, that's unique of and by itself, just teaching private business. But in addition to that, there are laws that go along with it. Some of these laws are good. Some of them are kind of poor. I don't make these laws, rules, and regulations. And I do business. I run a law school. I don't have a license. I'm not bonded. I'm not insured. I don't have a social security number. I don't have a bank account. I don't have any credit. I don't have any credit cards. I don't have any income. I avoid that like AIDS, herpes, and VD. And a lot of times people say, well, how do you live? And the answer is, I live very well. Thank you. In case somebody is worried about me. I live very well. I'm not complaining. I'm not a Donald Trump. I don't have all the money in the world like Bill Gates, but I'm able to pay my bills. And if I wanted to buy 3 cartons of cigarettes, I could do that, but I don't see any real point in it. I don't think I need those cigarettes, but I want to point out that there are people that need cigarettes, and it's not a bad business. They're selling, I didn't know to figure that out, $68 and some change for 3 cartons. How much is that? 68 divided by 3 is $22.66 a carton divided by 10. That's $2.26 a pack. Somebody told me the other day that cigarettes were selling in New York for $8 a pack. Is that true? $8 a pack? That's just a rumor. I don't know that personally, but somebody told me that. My God. I quit smoking when cigarettes hit 30 cents. It really ticked me off. I think that's probably why I quit smoking more than anything else, was cigarettes hit 30 cents a pack. It cost me a penny and a half to smoke weed. Number 75, everybody is a consumer, but only a few consumers are producers. Well, just take a look at that lady. She consumed 3 cartons of cigarettes, $5 worth of gas, which in today's economy is about $2.68 a gallon. She put $5 in. $5 divided by $2.68. She got 1.8 gallons of gas. Not that gasoline's a bad value at $2.68. It's about the same price as it was in 1950. 27.5 cents a gallon is what it cost then, nationwide average. But if you stop and think about that, you know, this lady's a consumer. She went in there and consumed a 12-pack of beer, 3 cartons of cigarettes, and 1.8 gallons of gas. She's a consumer. I don't think she produces very much. Soldiers in the Army are all consumers. They all have to have food, clothing, and shelter. They don't produce anything. Kind of like a guard in a beehive. Policemen, you know, they're people that consume, and they don't produce anything. I know all you soldiers and policemen are sitting out there just grinding your teeth. Send me an email, tell me what it is that you produce. Well, I produce security. Yeah. How do you eat security? How do you wear security? What do you do with security? Now, it's true that you got to have some guards in a beehive, just like you got to have some drones, but at least the bees keep the drones and guards under control. And they recognize that the money is made, or the honey is made, by the female workers, not by the guards, not by the drones. You got to have some drones, I don't deny it. Got to have a couple of guards, I don't deny it. But when you get too many, pretty soon you get your production consumption out of kilter. Now here in America, 51% of the people in this country now receive a government check. Now, boys and girls, government doesn't produce anything. Government consumes much and they produce nothing. And the best thing that you can say about government is that they get in the way in the process. And I guess it should be the worst thing that you could say, but then that's about the best thing. That's what government employees do best. They get in the way. That's why I prefer dealing with the mafia. They're thieves also. It doesn't make any difference whether the government's stealing from you or the mafia's stealing from you. But the thing I liked about the mafia is the guy comes into your store and he says, you need to pay your $100 this week for your production. And if you don't pay it, your store is going to burn down. So you give him the $100, he leaves. He gets the hell out of the way so you can go to work and make the $100 to give him the $100 again next week. when you're doing business with the government agent comes in, and you got to pay him. They call it fines, you know, when you're dealing with the government. It's called protection money when you're dealing with the mafia. It's called fines. But the government agent stays right there, stays in your face, and gets in the way so that you can't make the money to pay the fines. I don't know where in the hell these government agents have their heads. You know, it isn't where it belongs. The mafia guy, he causes less overall problems. He steals just as much, but he doesn't get in the way and cause a lot of problems, and stop you from making more money so that you can pay your payoff money next week. So remember that everybody's a consumer, but not everybody is a producer. And so we want to be producers. Number 76, do business with a producer, and prosperity will follow. But if you do business with a consumer, then poverty is your reward. So I mused about that for a minute yesterday, and I said, gee, this lady that buys 1.8 gallons of gas, 3 cartons of cigarettes, and a 12-pack of beer, is this the kind of person I want to do business with? Do I want to say, hey, lady, I've got things to sell over here. Would you like to buy some? Or, hey, lady, I've got work over here. Would you like to go to work? Or, hey, I've got this deal over here. Would you like to participate? Now, I've been around for a long time, and here's what I've discovered. There are people in the world that are winners, and there's people in the world that are losers. And every day people call this law school. And they've got all kinds of proposals when they call here. It just depends on who's calling and what it is, you know. And sometimes they're proposing that they come here and go to work. And to which I always ask, well, what is it that you want to do when you get here? Well, I'm a computer man, and I can come and take over your computers, and I can just do all these miracles with computers, and you'll love me because I'm such a great computer man. And I'm sitting here saying, well, now, do you honest to God believe that I'm just going to open my door to a total stranger and let you come in here and start fiddling with my computer? And that doesn't strike me as being very, very intelligent. I don't know about the average guy, but that doesn't strike me. Or, you know, guy, he says, well, I'm a carpenter, and I just come here and just cut boards like crazy. Well, okay, once in a while I need a carpenter, but that doesn't mean that I need a carpenter 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, 50 weeks a year. You know, I got a need for a plumber, an electrician, a carpenter, and a computer man from time to time, but I don't need one full-time all the time. So, you know, whatever it is that you're going to do in life, you got to have more than one customer. Just thought I took that one away in your heart over here. So, when you do business with a producer, now, there's no shortage of carpenters, electricians, and so on around here. When I need a carpenter, I can call one. You know, I can call old Steve, or I can call Charlie, or I can call Joe, and somebody, you know, will come out here and do a little work for me. And those guys are all winners because they're already workers. They already know what old Charlie can do. And if I had some brush to clear, I'd call old Charlie. If I had some trees to cut down, I'd call Charlie. Well, Charlie Hogue, you know, there isn't a tree cutter or a brush clearer anywhere around here that I know of that can keep up with old Charlie. I'd tell you a little story. I had a fence down here I needed to clear out about a quarter of a mile, and say, hey, Charlie, I need to clear this fence out 10 feet so I can get down there and fix this fence. I want to rebuild it. And then there's all this brush in the way, and I need you to go down there and clear that out. And so Charlie said, well, I want you to pay me about $5 an hour. I said, Charlie, I don't want to pay you by the hour because I don't want to pay to stand around. You go down there and tell me about how many hours that's going to take you, and you tell me how many dollars you want. He came back up and he said, well, I want about $300. So I said, okay, Charlie, you're on. Go down there and do that. So, well, Charlie, he pulled in. I saw him pull in with his pickup, and he went down there, and came back. And the next day I saw him. Charlie pulls in, and he comes back. And he went down there the third day, came back up about noon, said, well, I'll get paid. And I said, get paid? And I said, we got brush to clear down there, Charlie. And I said, I want you to do that whole job. I'm going to pay for half of it. And I'll get down there and do it all. He says, well, why don't you come on down here and take a look at it and see if that's what you want. So I was really bummed out. I said, I really don't want to go down here and look at this half-assed job and then have to complain about it, you know. But I said, well, I guess I better do that. So I jumped in the pickup with him, and we went on down there, and he had a strip 10 feet wide. I mean, he cut everything right down to the ground. He had that stuff windrowed on the back side, walked down from one end to the other, and I said, Charlie, I can't believe that you're done in 2.5 days. I don't know how much this guy was making here. $300. Let's see how much he made here. He probably worked about 20 hours. And he got $300. So that was 300 divided by 20 hours. Oh, my God. He took me to the cleaners. He got paid $15 an hour. Now, I was nervous about paying this guy $5 an hour. That was minimum wage. And he went out and he made $15 an hour doing the same job. Now, you know, my thinking was, well, it's well worth the $300 to get this thing cleared for me so I can build this fence. The $300, I don't care if this guy's making. If he'd have done that job in 8 hours, you know, he'd have probably been making $45 an hour, wouldn't he? Let's just take a look here. Punch in 300 divided by 8. Yeah, he'd been making $37.50 an hour if he could have been done in 8 hours. See, we're not concerned about how many dollars an hour you make. We're concerned about the overall job. Now, if you pay a guy $5 an hour, probably take him 2 or 3 weeks to do that job. And you pay the guy $300 and he can do it in 2.5 days, he can make $15 an hour. And Charlie's a pretty good worker, and I'm pretty sure Charlie went down and worked pretty hard. But, you know, Charlie is the kind of guy that you know is a winner. When you do business with a guy like Charlie, you're always going to make money. Now, that lady I told you about, you know, if I hired her to do that job or a job similar, what kind of a result do we think we're going to get off of a woman that spends her money on cigarettes and booze and a buck or a gallon and 8 tenths, two gallons of gas? That's a loser if I ever saw one. And people that smoke and drink, you know. You know, my dad used to drink a little, and he used to smoke a lot. But, you know, my dad was a pretty good worker in the old days. You know, people used to get out and work. I wouldn't say that a guy that smokes and drinks, you know, can't work. Old Charlie, you know, I don't think he smokes. He drinks a little. Old Charlie's an alcoholic. But Charlie is a winning alcoholic. Charlie, you know, when he goes out and does a job, now he's going to do a job for him. And he's going to get paid, and he gets paid well for it. So when you're doing business with a producer, and Charlie is a producer, prosperity will follow. And that was a prosperous job. I went down, built my fence, and I'm happy. You do business with a consumer, not somebody that spends all their money on cigarettes and booze, poverty will be your reward. 77. A rich man's needs are few, and he has much money with which to pay. God, that's a winner. Hey, I'm going to read that one to you again. Number 77, a rich man's needs are few. You know, people with money, they don't have very many needs. That's why they've got money, because they haven't spent their money on all these needs. See, poor people have many needs. That's number 78. A poor man's needs are many and endless, and he has no means with which to satisfy them. The difference between people with money and people without money is that the guy with money has a very simple lifestyle, and he doesn't have many needs, and he expends his energy in making money. And he's got plenty of it, and he's not complaining to anybody. The poor man over here, he just has needs and needs and needs. He just can't satisfy all of his needs. In fact, he's got so many needs that he's trying to fulfill. He hadn't got time to work. And then his needs keep piling up. So I evaluated these two groups of people. Now here's who I want to do business with. I want to do business with people with money. That's my conclusion. And here's what I've discovered. If you go down into the poor neighborhood and you try to sell a job, you know, I'm a contractor, so you go down here and you want to remodel somebody's bathroom. This guy just nickels and dimes you to death. He's picky. You know, you're going to do a bathroom for $7,000 and he's just complaining all every step of the way. And then he tries to stiff you. He's trying to screw you out of everything he can. You go up here in Bellwood Estates and you take a job for a lawyer. And the lawyer says, well, I want this and I want that and I want something else. And I want the best that you can buy. And if it's going to cost a little more, you go ahead and spend the money on it. And then you bid his job in for $14,000. That's twice as much money. And you come in here and you remodel the bathroom. He looks at it and he says, oh, my God, it's just beautiful. I can't tell you how pleased I am, Mr. Gordon. He pays you twice as much money. He pays you the $14,000, and he's just as happy as a clam at high tide. And I noticed that a rich man's needs are few. Now, you know, wealthy people, they want their job done, and they want it done right. And they don't want little baubles here and there, mistakes. They don't like that. So the job has to be done right. The poor man, in his job, not only has to be done right, it has to be done better than right, and then he doesn't want to pay you for it, because he hasn't got a whole lot to pay you anyway, so he's nickel and diming you. The rich man's got plenty of money, he's not trying to nickel and dime, he just wants this perfect job. And if you've got the skills and ability, you can turn out this perfect job, he pays you and he loves you. And then he recommends you to his friends. His friends come over and he says, look at this bathroom I put in. I've done a lot of these. And then their friends, you know, they say, well, look, old Richard over here, he got a new bathroom put in, and he had this contractor, George Gordon, put it in, and it's really the top of the line, and I want one of those too. And so they want Gordon to come out and put that in for them. And then pretty soon, you know, you're dealing up here in Bellwood Estates, and you're getting paid all the time, making twice as much money. And everything's working out well. So that taught me a lesson. A rich man is the guy you want to work for. And the poor man is the guy that you want to avoid, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. I know it's not the communist way. I know we should all be down on the Gulf Coast rebuilding houses down there for free. I understand that. Now, you go on down there to the Gulf Coast and donate your labor and help those people build their houses. They're all poor and they all need help. I don't deny it. But there isn't any money in it. Now, if those people down on the Gulf Coast had spent more of their time, effort, and energy putting their money in a pile over here instead of paying it off to the insurance companies, which stole their money and didn't pay them for the damages anyway, they'd be money ahead, wouldn't they? Now, there's one more thing I got to say about the people down on the Gulf Coast. You know, I'm not wishing anybody bad luck. But I want to tell you, I live in Tornado Alley. Now, this piece of real estate that I live on over here is called Tornado Alley. And tornadoes come through here. And we haven't had one here for quite a few years, but, you know, there's been a few come through here. One of them hit Cookies in 1978, and I've got pieces of Cookies up here on an 80 that I got up here behind the house. To this day, from 1978, we got Cookies signs and Cookies, Cookies boat landing over here on the hillside. So, we know we have those here. Now, boys and girls, my house may be blown down in a tornado. And when that happens, I'm going to be one sad puppy. But I want to tell you that none of you people in Seattle owe me a dime. I choose to live here in Tornado Alley because I like it here. And I'm accepting the risks that go along with it. And my wife the other day, she bought a house down here on Barn Fork, and she said, you know, just in case a tornado comes through and knocks our house down, I want to have this other house over here on Barn Fork, because I don't think that a tornado is going to catch this one in the valley and ours up on top of the hill on the same day. And so I think she's pretty wise to do that. So we got a second house over here now, just in case this one gets blown down, and we got another one over here. So wanted to tell you that you people don't owe me anything. So, you know, it'll be a tough break if my house gets blown down. I don't deny that. And I'll have to get out here and build me another one. But you people don't owe me anything. Now, if you've got a little extra money and you want to donate it to charity, I can't think of a better charity than to help your fellow man down on the Gulf Coast. But, you know, those people all chose to live down there. And this hurricane that just came through here a couple of years ago isn't the first time they've ever had a hurricane down there on the Gulf Coast. They had one down there once before. And I think everybody down there knows that that's a hurricane alley down there. Now, if you want to choose to live down there, you need to grow up and understand that, yeah, it's a real neat place to live and it's real pretty and all that. But, you know, when the wind blows real hard over there, it may blow your house away. And the people in Seattle really don't owe you a new house down there. And then you people up in Seattle, you know you live in Earthquakeville. So when your house gets shaken down, always remember, now you chose to live there. You people that live in Seattle, you're living right next to that Mount Rainier, and it's going to blow up one of these days, just like Mount St. Helens. Now you decided that you wanted to live at the base of the volcano, now didn't you? All right, so let your conscience be your guide. All right, number 79. You know, business is for the rich man, charity is for the poor. And the poor we have with us always. The Messiah told us that. So make sure that you take care of the poor. And that's what we have third tithe for. That's for the poor. But business is for the rich man. Always remember that. People with money do business. Poor people work in the mines. I was married to a woman one time. She says, "Why don't you go out and get a real job?" Boys and girls, the reason I don't go out and get a real job is because there's no money in employment. There's no money doing that. The money is in business. It's in buying, selling, and trading. And that's what I'm interested in, is the money. Number 80. A wise man deals in property. A fool deals in commercial paper. Remember that story I told you? Gold is the currency of kings. Silver is the currency of gentlemen. Barter is the currency of peasants. And debt is the currency of slaves. Debt, commercial paper, Federal Reserve notes. That's the currency of slaves. People that deal in paper money, fiat currency, stocks and bonds and all that kind of crap, they end up poor. Oh, I don't deny that people that play the slot machines win every once in a while. And yeah, it's true. If you buy a lottery ticket, you know, you might win $84 million. But, kids, I have never bought a lottery ticket, and I'm an old man. If I live to be 110 years old, I'm not going to buy a lottery ticket. The odds are 84 million to one. I'd rather take the dollar and go buy a Starbucks coffee. Assuming you could get one for a buck. And there's other uses, you know, for dollars other than lottery tickets and gambling. So I just thought I'd share that with you. A wise man deals in property. Property, the real deals. He doesn't deal in commercial paper. So if you follow these business principles, you know, we're up to 80. We've got 20 or one more to go here. But you deal in these business principles, and I think you're gonna find that you're going to start making money. I mean, it's been my experience. And I've had pretty good experience in a long life so far. Hey, I'm about out of time, so I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. Remember, we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We're open to individuals, but by prearrangement. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Didn't cost anything. Pick up the telephone, give us a call. To order yours, the number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.